I'm excited to hear from feedback whether the effort we put into the agenda is noticeable in any way whatsoever.
No, no, it'll be promptly ignored because Al's arrived.
Yes.
So that's just...
You're saying I will follow the agenda, but I like looking at it.
No. I know you appreciate it and then promptly ignore it, and I love that about you.
Like the fact that all three of us are aware that there is an agenda
is
a real... It's reading from a teleprompter.
Look, I think that's one of the tricks about this is, like, really, if we're being honest, we, like, started... Rolling Fund, because like we were all seeing cool stuff and we wanted like a reason to hang out together and like eat good food and also like invest in cool companies and founders.
Yeah.
But the balance of those things is just really tricky to fit in, frankly, like, cause we want to do all those things all the time. And so,
May I say, last hangout, shout out to Wyandotte County Barbecue.
Yeah, let's go. Let's go.
Bro, the bird end sandwich. Woo, man.
I love memories.
I bet no place looks worse on Google Maps than Wyandotte Barbecue.
No, but it's fire, dude.
It's so good.
It's good.
You sit in the back. It was like sitting in your great aunt's home that nobody's touched since the 70s.
Yeah.
And you're just like, okay, we're not dusting the shelves. We're not sweeping the floor, but man, this sandwich is great.
Yeah. Six tables. And when the door opens, everybody looks to see who it is because they assume they know.
Yeah, everybody knows everybody. Right? No, it was really fun taking us to home field. For folks listening, I've fallen deeply in love with a business of youth basketball because I spend a lot of time there with my 12-year-old, and they built this really, truly fabulous facility in Wyandotte County, Kansas. And I took Eric and Al there. And we looked at cool basketball courts and then went and ate barbecue at a place that definitely has not changed in 50 years, I would say.
Oh, yeah.
Listen, if you're an LP in this fund, Bo's child, Pierce, is a phenom. and the LPs, will get signed merchandise when he commits to a college. I mean, that's really why they're here. All of our LPs are mainly scouts and head coaches.
No, we're looking for more LPs and NIL sponsors for youth basketball at the same time. So, I don't know, casting a wide net.
Rolling Fund would look great on a jersey.
We
should have Pierce promoting, like, My Chevrolet or something. Like, driveway today at My Chevrolet.
Yeah.
Are there jersey sponsorships available for the youth basketball
team?
Where he is playing at home field, which is the name of the kind of business and facility and stuff that they're playing at. They actually have a jersey sponsor, big grocery store chain, who paid to get their names on every single jersey for every team that is there.
Costantino's?
Price Chopper, owned by the same guy. David Ball knew what he was doing there. He slid right in early, wrote the check, and they're on every jersey.
Smart. Hy-Vee got Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
Price Chopper got Pierce Fishback.
Right, same thing. Same thing.
They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
How do we get Rolling Fun right up here? That's what
I like it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look good. Al, you want to, since we're in your home turf.
So we had a 9 a.m. sharp call time this morning.
It's currently 11.
I was up till 12:30 watching Three Body Problem on Bo's Recommendation. And it is fantastic. Yeah. If you have not gotten into this, I read the book. I listened to the book on audiobook and couldn't quite track the different eras that I was switching in between. And so I'm watching the movie or the TV show. And I was like, oh, this is brilliant. Oh, I like this much better. Oh, that was too different. Oh, different time, same person. Okay. Because in the audiobook, it was very confusing. Anyway, up till 12:30. So I'm up early, 7 a.m. because I got to leave at 8 to get down there by 9. I send a text 7:30, like, hey, guys, are we at your place, my place? What are we doing? Because we're almost always at Bo's place. I think it was assumed. I would have been safe getting in the car and just driving to Bo's place.
Yeah.
And then right around, 7:45, 8. I was like, hey, we can come. Bo's like, I got nothing going today. We can come to Hamilton.
Let's go, Hamilton.
Here we are. They drove to the farm and got a little tour there. Now we're in Hamilton. You see the beauty. It's 71 degrees. I mean, everybody says, come to Missouri if you want perfect weather.
Right.
71 degrees, slight wind out of the north. That's all you want. We're going to go walk out to Kathy's kitchen at the end of this and get ourselves a large pork tenderloin sandwich.
Hell yeah, we are.
The size of your head. That's all you want, man. Like, we're in Hamilton. We're doing the quilting town.
I cannot paint a beautiful enough picture of, like, cresting the hill of Al's acres and seeing him just like knee deep in a raspberry patch with his tractor. I've never seen someone go elegantly from like farm labor to recording a podcast.
I wish I had longer hair so I could just like shake it out of the beard. Really? Yes. If I could look up at Eric, hello, airplane in tall style, man, that'd been it.
It was gorgeous.
Glad you guys came.
It's a nice place up there. It's beautiful. And this is the bachelor pad in the most 60-year-old lady town in America.
Yeah, so, I went my entire life living in my mother's spare bedroom, and then as a 30-year-old, she was like, I would like home base here. So yeah. I had an apartment that I was living in, but I had none of my stuff. I was like, everything could fit in the back of the Toyota Camry. And so I would always come home here for like, you know, a couple of weeks. And, you know, off flying for a couple months in Berlin. I'd come home to Missouri and go to mom's house. And so then she's like, you need to move out. So I moved into the apartment above the main quilt shop, which was like, it was just some old crappy apartment. And then we tore down while I was gone. And my sister, who loves me very much, is like, I will build you an apartment. Build this beautiful place. I ordered an 8-foot painting of George Washington for the bedroom. Between ordering that and getting it, I got married.
Yeah.
My wife moved in, and then they delivered said 8-foot painting of George Washington. And she was like, oh, where's this going? I was like, above our bed.
Yes.
Like hell it is.
Right.
And so I lived for 8 months in this bachelor pad, and now it's a nice office. And I wish I would have had more time here. It's a great spot. I like
amazing.
It.
Amazing. Amazing spot. Nice. It is an amazing town.
I like that. I can't not tell a story. If I've got a story, you have to hear it. And a dining room table with me and my mother is just constant, like, no. It's just a story is too enticing for me.
That's why we had to get you a podcast, man. So welcome.
Wait, I almost took the David Perel writing thing that you posted about.
Why almost?
Well, because it was $4,000.
What's the return on being a good writer?
I don't know. I've never written. but I was like, man, I got some stories to tell. Do I just need more time to sit and write, or do I need better skills? That was my question in my head. I couldn't get over it. But yeah, maybe off the record, you can tell me the real. Have you taken it? Did you take his writing course?
No, but I have a lot of friends who have and found it to be transformative.
That tweet, man, that was a very high endorsement of this. And I was like, is this how you became good writer?
I've learned a lot from David, but I have not taken his course directly.
Maybe
but
we should take it
he's
together.
A good buddy. Like that would be fun.
Hey, Rolling Fun can pay for our course. That's where the management fees will go.
If it improves our writing about portfolio companies or our a thing we're going to try to do is be more prolific on the writing side of things. Like Bo and I talked about a bunch
over
the last
month. What
you
notice is we don't tell very good stories ever.
We do. We have, despite saying all this, we do have more to say and more to share, I think.
Yeah.
It is funny, man. We hear this all the time, but of all the funds out there, like we do a better job talking about what we're doing and why we're doing and what's going there than any that I'm a part of that I've seen.
Yeah. At least I've had LPs tell me that they're, you know, a few years in with us now. We're 2 years in basically.
That's crazy.
And
that's a lot of barbecue.
That's a lot of barbecue. I've had people say like, you know, we are shutting down other investments and putting more with you. Like, we don't even know what all the returns are comparatively yet, but you're just the only ones that communicate consistently and like send an actual update every quarter with what you invested in and why. And I'm like, oh, I didn't know that was going to be a competitive
advantage.
That just
feels like a thing you should do, right?
Shoot us a text. We're happy to hear from you. We want your referrals. We want to know what's going on. Yeah.
Yeah. So all that to say, welcome to the only deep tech podcast recorded in the quilting capital of the world, Hamilton, Missouri.
That's right.
We had to get so specific so we could win, but yes, suck it, other deep tech podcasts.
Coming from San Francisco, that's so played out. Right? So played out.
How gauche. Yeah. How cliche.
Okay, let's do a podcast. Should we do the portfolio updates next?
I mean, it's on the agenda.
What's on the agenda, Al?
Yeah. I think we have catch up to do. I think we should definitely do Q4 because it's been a minute. And I think you should probably talk about some new deal flow stuff just because it is helpful for everybody to know.
Okay. I'll do Marathon and then I'll do Portola.
Mm.
That's your boy. But so Marathon Fusion, in order to grok the Fusion investment, you got to first come around to the fact that like, hopefully we've crossed the threshold of like Fusion no longer being permanently 20 years away. And like, there's some very smart money that says that number is actually coming down now and is maybe closer to 10. Just last week we had the longest ignition ever, which was like coming up on a minute actually in China, which is amazing. Packy McCormick did a ton of good background on fusion in his podcast series Age of Miracles, which helped me sort of that, and just like some friends in the fusion industry and people much closer to fusion it are like friends. No, we're getting
that's another great podcast.
Ooh, yeah. Smart friends, fusion friends. That would be a fusion roundtable would be a good one. So Marathon is a guy who actually used to work at like Schmidt Ventures, very like cutting edge, super smart CEO, and the CTO dropped out of plasma physics at Princeton to they're basically
loser.
Building
dropped out of dropout. Plasma fusion. He couldn't even hack it in plasma. Like, that's what all the fusion guys say. Like, this guy couldn't even hack it in plasma. Oh my gosh.
They are building tritium breeders, which are basically like it's picks and shovels for fusion reactors. It's a thing that every reactor will need for new reactors. Fuel is the constraint. So you need a fuel breeder for every reactor. They're some of the only people building one and think they have a lead on all the other people. They got a LOI from Commonwealth and Helion. And they're just like in a garage in San Francisco building tritium breeders for fusion reactors. And if they can build it, they'll sell a bunch of them. And if fusion turns real, they'll sell a whole shitload of them. But if I'm being honest, about halfway through the pitch, he started using the word trillion. And that's all it took. If you say trillion, it could be $1 trillion market, it could be trillion market cap, trillion cents raised. It doesn't matter. I'm in. But I talked to some people in the industry who were like, and they were like, oh, yeah, no, I know them. I like close friends, smart people, high credibility shot. It is the cutting edge of cutting edge of like skating where the puck is going in 10 years. But sometimes that's how long you need to develop a technology.
What a giant
like this.
Set of balls to be like, no.
On us?
On them. Pick a problem out there and be like, you know what nobody does very well?
Yeah.
Is the fusion. the breeders. No one's breeding that stuff very good. Like, I can get that.
Yeah. I like.
Well, because in our minds, I feel like, especially if I was 20, right? I would be like, there's smarter people.
Yeah.
So smart guy, GE will fix this if we get, you know, like somebody smart is going to do this. But the truth is, like, the stuff that's coming in 10 years, like, nobody's making that stuff. And
when you actually take how many like hard scientist specialists there are capable of building this and like slice it all the way down, like how many plasma physics PhDs are there in the country?
That's actually like, one of the things that I had on like the what are we learning as we do this list is like when you really get frontier with technology. It's really a small universe of people who are building stuff. Yeah, and yeah. So it's weird. It seems like when you, all of us are kind of like operators, frankly, who are like run companies, when you start to look around as an investor and you're like, yeah, I mean, you can't be an expert in everything, but it's also like, oh, well, there's 14 people in the world that's working right. on this. And one of them wants to go and build a company. We should probably be a part of that. Right. And so it's like some of these like very frontier things, it is really just a human capital issue. It's like, are you motivated? Are you willing to be like, go work on it in your garage.
Yeah.
And it's like, we got to bet on those companies. Yeah. Like we got to bet on them. Right. It's like a one of N of one. Right. And that's pretty awesome.
I love, as a, like just playing the game of what is good for society.
Yeah.
Being the capital that is in a absolutely singular, like irreplaceable company of like, there's one person who's qualified to work on it or who is actually working on it. Let's make sure that genius pioneer gets the capital they need to build the thing that is like advances all of civilization. Like, I just feel so much better about that than like a hot round for meal delivery startups or anything like that.
Yep.
Listen, hot rounds and meal delivery sounds delicious too. We're not counting that.
Pork tenderloin sandwiches for everybody.
If I can get that up here, right?
Yeah.
Now.
Hell yeah. That's Marathon Fusion.
Wait, so are they just zeroed in on this one piece of the pipeline, or is there like, well, once we get there, we'll start building other things?
I mean, I think that is plenty big piece and the foreseeable future. I'm endorsing the focus. That's a really good one. And a thing like a new heuristic also is companies that seem like it's hard to predict this at an early stage, but seem like they are trying to fill in the blank for we are the only company on earth capable of doing X.
Yep.
Like that is just a really like, that's a pretty good moat. And it's a very like simple logic problem. So this is definitely one, not every investment probably that we are ever do is going to pass that test with flying colors at the early stages.
Yep.
And I don't think it has to, but it's a really good
early
filter to be like binary, yes, no. Are we excited about it? Do we want to carry on? Marathon was definitely one of them.
Cool. That's cool.
So, yeah.
Let me tell you about Portola.
Tell us about Portola.
So this is Quentin Farmer, who Quentin and I, we were both interns in Techstars New York circa 2011. So you go back in time and ways. We were the schlups in there that were moving stuff around. Honestly, I think that intern class has made more money than
Techstars class
of that 2011. That's right. I mean, we've had good returns. So Quentin went on, like, his first thing out of there, he called like 2 or 3 years later, was like, hey, I'm starting this company called Even. It's a finance thing that ended up getting acquired by Walmart. And so, like, I was super broke and still interning at the time, but I was like, take my $5,000. He's like, I will take your money and I love you. And it's actually the first company I ever invested in that gave me a return, which was awesome. So they sold their company to Walmart in a great outcome, like did very good by everybody. Even with my dilution, I was still very happy.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, stayed in touch with him as he exited, because we kind of do this with all of the founders. I feel like we're good therapy buddies.
Yeah.
Right. But like, as you exit and you go through the existential crisis of like, oh, geez. What do I do now? Well, like that was so, like, I always enjoy getting those phone calls and being good sounding boards for that. And he and I were chatting through a bunch of stuff, and then I watched him sort of like go through the process. Cause some, like, when I stepped back from my company, it was a very, like, I don't know what I'm making brooms in Arkansas. Now I've learned, like, I was all over the place.
You had to start climbing mountains for no reason.
He's the exact opposite, where he's like, I've made a spreadsheet of all the ideas that I like. And then I worked through, like, he was like very deliberate of, he wanted to go and do another thing. And he and his co-founders from Even have banded back together, and they went after the AI space early on. And so what they're doing and why I love it is they're starting with like AI for kids, essentially, where he's like, make it very simple. We want to put these building blocks together like Lego blocks, and you can build an AI with like, oh, I want a story to be able to do like that, and I want it to be able to have this, and I want to do this thing. And so you learn about these sort of algorithms and models that you can piece together to do cool things as a 10-year-old. I'm like, that's cool. And but like, where's the big vision? He's like, well, we're just copying Replit. Which is that the right company? I think that's right.
Yeah, that's right.
Replit, where he's like, they built it initially just so like high schoolers could go and learn how to code. And then what happened is, because you learn how to code in there, if you can scale up your project and continue hosting and keep it going, they don't want to go and build anywhere else, because this is the easiest environment, this is the most interesting environment, and it's got all the tools they need. And they made it easy for a generation, and that's paying huge dividends. It's like real sites to run on Replit now. And so they're trying to do the same thing for AI in that, and say, look, we're gonna put all these models in here. Our job's gonna go be to go and box them up and put them in ways that kids can play with them. And then as they build in here and build cool stuff, we'll just follow them along and let them continue hosting and have grown-up plans that they can move to and host real projects and solve real things in here. So great vision, very excited about what they're building and the sort of caliber of the team that we're backing to go after it. And yeah, they're fun.
The design is amazing. It's quite an awesome team.
Yeah.
I love when you see a team that's like already been through the whole cycle together. Yeah. And they're like, look, we put a couple million in the bank. Like, we're good. This is the big swing.
Yeah.
We know we love working together. Reduces some of the risk there.
And we were back at it. They were backed well. It was one of those where, like, he's like, bro, I know I said we'd get you in and this much. We got to go. And I was like, I am your friend. How dare you cut my check down? I texted Bo. I was like,
yeah, that's right.
This hurts my feelings a little bit. And he's like, no, it's good. We're excited. It's a very sought after round. They were the hot ticket in town for a minute, but
you were an early commit and you got the cram down.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. We were like, he's like,
which is, that's the first time we've ever had a like hit an allocation ceiling in a round.
Yeah.
I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think anybody else has been like, would have stopped us from investing more or certainly has like given us a lower allocation.
Because of our reputation, and they want all of our money. But those big guys come in, they want to write the whole check and nothing but the check, so help them God.
Yeah. Well, and they got that second time founder kind of premium too.
Yeah. When like you said, the second time founder, they definitely get a premium. But when that whole team, when you get the team that like knows how to work together, it's very juicy. So we were excited. We're excited to be a part of it and see what they build.
They don't have a product launched yet as far
they
as
have. So they have some stuff in like test flight and stuff that like my kids play around and we open it up every now and then. And it's just like story building right now. Okay. It's like, hey, make an image now, tell a story and have them do this. And like the kids are like, oh, and then have them do this. And they like sort of build this Mad Libs.
And your kids are young, like they're interacting with it at a
three and five. Yeah. Like, so we're early to it, but like they enjoy it. It reads the story to them after they write it. And it's one of those, but there's a lot of those, but that's not the product. That's like the product that the product can build. Yeah. And so it's been fun, but like, yeah, I think you can go to the website, you might be able to sign up for something.
Yeah. I don't know how much of what we have seen is actually public yet, but the vision for the whole, like,
don't tell anybody, and Quinn, I'm very sorry for spoiling the beans.
And this is why the allocation was crammed out.
They knew they were letting a liability.
They don't send me as many updates now. I don't know what to do.
No, it's great. Yeah, that's a cool one. Very talented team. I think it's an interesting, like, it's been really interesting to see. Everybody's like, AI, okay. And we have a bunch that are, how precise can you make that new AI-enabled shot?
Yeah.
Like, I think that's a really, like, there'll be a whole era of really interesting companies in that. And this is an interesting one. Like, maybe the competitive advantage, like the platform, new AI opens up the opportunity for the space for a new type of company to get built. But the people with the advantage are actually the ones who've been like operating very similar companies before.
Yeah.
And have the design and the software and the distribution skill set to like go be the first to get it deployed.
Man, it's fun.
Yeah.
I like this job.
this is an awesome team. Like four really solid people from the very beginning, building like crazy.
Yeah, good one. Excited to give the updates here, man.
Yeah. Cool. I meant to shout out Patrick Finley also for introducing us to Marathon. Let me end cap the Marathon.
I'm sorry. We are done with Marathon.
I'm not done with Marathon because I need to thank my boy Patrick Finley for the hookup.
Yo, Patrick Finley.
He's the man. I love him.
Anybody else you love? That you just... No, Patrick, listen, thank you. Also, Nelson Mandela was great.
I'm a big Ryan Reynolds fan.
Big Ryan Reynolds. I want to see the new movie.
Ryan Reynolds fan.
Wayne Gretzky, the real OG.
We're just naming people that we like. Emeril Lagasse, I kind of miss him. I don't know what he's been up to.
But mainly Patrick Finley.
I also made a note to come back to something that I think is a good, like, distinguisher of people in the investing space. Like, there's a lot of founders like drag investors all the time, and there's a lot of different kinds of investors, a lot of people like playing very different games, like with good and bad connotations there. I think it's interesting, like, you and I have very similar stories of like scraping together our like first, probably not technically legal investment, to like put it into a friend's company that we were like, oh my, I love this dude, I think this is gonna be great. Like,
I think you did your first one by giving me money when I was investing in another company. Yeah. And you were like, can I just slide in on that or whatever?
I had to convince you to invest.
You'll make it
and
right
then
up
buy the us, like,
yeah, Bo, you need to invest in this company. I was like, okay, cool, I'll invest in that company. And also, can you please slide my $5,000 in with your money? Because I can't do it. And I was like, sure.
It was awesome.
It worked out great.
That was hilarious. Yeah.
And that company worked out great.
That's true.
So,
true.
I mean,
which
company
was that?
It's Density.
Density, yeah.
Yeah. Which is a $1 billion company at their last fundraise. It's like amazing. And Andrew's a good friend. And even he was like, I don't need your $5,000 check.
Correct.
How about we talk to Bo? It's like, all right, yeah. It works out great.
He even came to my house.
Yeah,
that's right.
Like, he flew out with like a Blues Brothers suitcase handcuffed to him with his sensor, like prototype in there. And he's like,
was very impressive.
Really, it was beautiful. It was very, very steep.
And look
job.
At him now. Look at him now. It's pretty good. Yeah, pretty good.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
But I do think there's a whole like class of kind of people that have never bet their own money on a company. And they like got a job as an associate and somebody else raised them the money. And it's this very like intellectual exercise that is far from the moment of like, this is a good chunk of my savings and a painful amount of money, but I'm still going to put it in this friend's startup and see the feedback loop from that firsthand personally in my account.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. You and I were talking about it on the way up here a little bit, Eric, but I think on the way up to beautiful Hamilton, Missouri. But I think that's you have like one perspective on early stage investors and even later stage investors when you're like operating a company and running money, and like raising money. When you become an investor, you all of a sudden get like quite empathetic with some stuff that you see on the investor front that was always annoying when you were a founder, but
like immediately you're like,
I kind of get it. Like, yeah. I get it now. But it's funny listening to you talk about like the Techstars intern class, right? Like, I feel like we have a cool thing here where like what would be really awesome is if a bunch of our LPs who are like very small LPs go on to be fabulous investors someday on their own, right? Yeah. Like, oh, well, like I was in the LP class at Rolling Fund and it was 5,000, 10,000 a quarter or whatever. And like now I'm writing big checks and like I've invested in 10 unicorns and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, there's just so much education on the investor side to do that is actually really helpful to know on the founder side.
Yeah.
That is a fun thing for us to get to see like on the other side, I think.
Yeah. As a lot of the conversations we have with founders that they find most helpful are, hey, here's what an investor's perspective is. Yeah. Like, here's the game theory. Here's what they're optimizing for. And so many times founders are like, that's the board from their point of view.
I actually said, we were talking to Oros, one of our portfolio companies last time. Last time we were together, yeah, that's his name, but the company is. Bo gave some advice to him, and I was like, man, I wish I would have heard that advice midway in my company. Like, that's exactly what everybody needed to hear. Or it's just like, here's the strategy. Here's what you don't need to worry about. Like, you can go from here to here. This is how you get your, like, this is how you need to think about the money. And I was like, man, I wish I would have had like, us three sitting around a table trying to help me solve a problem when I was like doing a thing. It's like, it's incredibly meaningful.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you think like all the shit that annoyed us as founders trying to fundraise, and it's hard to not, it's interesting to see which of those things you actually start doing yourself and which you are better at. Cause some of it is just like, no, that's like, this is the game of mitigating the risk, and there are risks that you see as a investor or have to deal with as an investor that like a founder isn't in there. Like, it's not in their perspective. It's not in their field of view, and nor should it be, like,
right.
Maybe. But as much as we can try to like bridge that gap and open that conversation, hopefully is helpful for people to learn to invest and for founders trying to figure out how to
fundraise.
Look, we're doing this for you guys,
for you,
the listener.
It's not for us.
This, we don't even care, but like for you.
I think one that people have been very annoyed about on Twitter over the recent thing that like in some ways has an answer to it, but in some it isn't, is like everybody waiting for a lead.
Yeah.
Like how many times have you each heard, come back to me when you have a lead?
That killed my last on Pretzel when I was trying to raise my last round. I was trying to raise like, I think $2 or $3 million. And I had like 1 point something committed of people that are like, as soon as you get a lead, let me know. And I'm like, you're the lead. Just give me the money, wire it in. And I got the lead. We're fine. But it's like, it's that same thing where everybody's like, I'm down. Call me when you got a lead. Call me when like most of the work is done, and then I'll like jump on. Gosh, dang
it. Yeah.
Which I mean, honestly, like as a founder, I was very critical of, and as an investor, like I get this. I mean, we're not leads, and so there's a little bit of like, hey, I want to give you our money, but I don't want to give you $50,000 if this company doesn't exist on Friday. So can you pull some stuff together? And then we're in. We want to be a part of it. Like, count us in for sure. But like, I kind of get it a little bit differently now that we're on the investor side. But yeah.
I think it is one of those things too, where we do not fit into a bucket of advertising ourselves as a lead. And we are not a lead. But there are actually a lot of funds out there who essentially market themselves as somebody who you come to early and talk to about being a lead. And I mean, I tell founders frequently, like, hey, let me see the list of folks who you think you should raise money from. And smart founders have like a very nice spreadsheet, and there's 172 funds on there. And then I'm like, okay, can we first eliminate everyone who hasn't led a round in the last year? And then there are 14 names left on the list. Right. And it's like that's a really easy test to say, like, I'm sure they would be great investors. If you don't have a lead yet, do not waste your time on people who haven't led a deal in the last year or whatever. And like, you save yourself a ton of time, but you don't actually know that because so many people are like, come to us early. We'll lead you around. Right. We have this big a fund. And then you find out it's already all allocated. Oh, we're not even allowed to, you know, lead a seed round. You have to be. And it's like, it's, if you can know that from the other side early on, you just save yourself a huge amount of time, right? Like it is a big quality of life upgrade to be able to focus your effort in areas that are worthwhile.
And that's the momentum shift too, right? Like we just participated in a fundraise. It was like a slow grind. And we said early, like, we love this. We commit.
Yeah.
Like, but we can't wire money until there's a consensus on the round.
Like, well, the move was like I had to go to work and help them find a lead, right? Yeah, it wasn't like hey,
which is a huge one actually, huge. Right? Like we're not going to lead this. We want to participate. If you need a lead and we can help, we'll help.
Well, we got on the phone and like we helped them solve that thing. And like, yeah, yep. There was a couple of months of grinding through it, but like, bunch of intros. How did these ones go? Here's strategy around this. And we got it together, which was great because we wanted to write the check. So we needed to help solve that problem for them.
Yeah.
Was sort of how we viewed it.
And it went from 4 months of like soft commits, circle backs to as soon as they had a lead, all of a sudden it was oversubscribed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
They asked the same question. Can we push you down? Heck no, you can't push us down. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
So ungrateful.
No,
as soon they forget. Yeah. I think that is a big it's interesting to unbundle the roles that a lead, like, one, they set the terms, two, usually like the largest chunk of capital, which de-risks the smaller checks. I wonder if any other like super key thing. So like maybe as a founder, can do like a first close of like, look, you don't want to write an isolated 50 to 100K check, probably, at least not without different terms.
Yeah.
But if you get 500 at once.
For complete rounds, though, also, like, I mean, think safes and convertible notes and stuff have made this a lot easier to get going without it, where those become generally accepted documents. Yeah. But honestly, like, for a real lead in a real priced round, the transaction costs are non-trivial.
Yeah.
And they roughly get fronted by the investor and then paid usually by the company. But like, that's a big pain in the ass. Like, if we had to be in the midst of papering every priced round that we did, like, our legal bills would go up quite a lot. And like, you just don't like it. It is an underappreciated but like annoying thing that has to happen in the process.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a lot heavier diligence and like all of those things, which it is a totally rational thing. Super annoying from the founder's point of view, which I appreciate. So find early. You can get early commits from investors. Hopefully, find people that have led rounds or who can credibly help you find a lead investor and actually be like a signal with their early commitment, not just like a piddly. Kind of like, yeah, sure, maybe.
That's what was different with because normally if you have an investor, it's like, I don't want to invest, but I'll intro you to somebody. It's a very bad signal. You're like, don't pass on me and then intro me. That's not going to get me to success. But we were like, hey, we're committed. You should take a look at these guys. And that was a much better intro for me to make around than anything else I could have said, right?
Is there like, if you're a founder doing the research on who's led rounds recently in the last year, like, how can you tell who's a lead and who's just a participant? Like, a lot of times it's just a portfolio page.
You can figure it out. You can figure it out. I mean, honestly, like, things like Crunchbase are helpful, but there are places to go where you can figure out who the leads are. The other thing is, like, honestly, it is where having, like, a good network of CEO friends and founders is, like, incredibly helpful to say, like, oh, hey, they're invested in this company. Do you know who led it? And then you can connect them and ask. That what I would say is like your time is really well spent doing that if you're raising, because it's really easy to spend a lot of time and diligence chasing stuff down and then realize that, oh, this was never going to happen anyway. Right. Mm-hmm. And that is super frustrating, which is why like transparency wins and that stuff. It's like, hey, look, certainly at our fund size now, we're not going to lead. What you want from lead investors is actually different than participating investors. Like for us, you want to know that like we're going to help if we can help and we're going to not be a pain in the ass. And like that is great. When you're talking to a lead, you want to know that they have like really independent conviction about your idea, right? Like it is true that a thing that I always hated when raising money is like the power of social proof. Like, why do you care so much what other people are doing? Just shut up. If you like it and you like me, let's write a check. And the truth is there's some there on the other side of it, you're like, well, gosh, all of these smart folks are investing. All of there's multiple connection points. Like, you can't help it if you're in our case, in our position now, where it's like that that tilts you in the favor of doing it. From a lead, it's a little different, right? If you're a lead, like, you almost like, can't rely on some social proof. Yeah. And so you need someone who is all about independent conviction. And I'm going to actually write a check to you when 10 other people have passed. That is a, that's like, if we had a much bigger fund, like if we had a much, much bigger fund, which we may or may not have someday for lead investments, that would be the bar of like, dudes, we're not doing this without great, great conviction.
Yeah.
And with this, it's like, hey, we love the person or we love the market. Sure, there's some other great investors in there. Like, you can get to conviction quick and then you can make a lot of bets, but that is a different strategy than if you're whatever floodgate, they're going to try to do 13 investments a year and all of them they're going to lead. It's just a, you're in a different seat. Like,
and it's a little bit of a, like, you know, if you're going to put $1 million into a round, it's like, hey, we're going to spend 20 hours with this founder. Like,
sure.
Like a lot more time, a lot more effort into like de-risking or just super, super deeply understanding those things. Yeah, I think that's a very interesting piece of.
I feel like I've learned a lot in the last 2 years about like the psychology of placing a lot of bets and what are the things where we as a group are like, this is a no-brainer versus this is an insane idea. Mm-hmm. And like, that is like a really, that's been like a very fun part for me. It's like, it's, we for sure in the last year have had companies where we looked at it where one of us had an enormous amount of conviction until we had a conversation about it. And then the conviction was just squashed. and where all of us were kind of like the opposite of like, I don't know. And then one of us talks to the CEO, talks to the founder, whatever, makes a trip to meet them or whatever. And then comes back like, guys, this is one we got to do. Yeah. And like, I don't know, that has been a very fun part of the learn. Like, I feel much more comfortable today than I did a year ago about us placing lots of bets on founders that we love, on frontier technology in ways that we're like, I don't know enough about it to feel good about it. And then the three of us spend time talking about it and talking about why it makes sense to build AI tools for 12-year-olds. And then it's like, oh, someone is going to have to build that. And actually, you're building a long-term distribution path to market in an area where there's not that many smart people building things. Yeah. And so like, you get, I mean, those are just things that like, really build conviction when you've got a group of people who like you respect and are smart working on it together.
Yeah. I like looking, imagining how our history, the history that we're writing today looks from 20 years from now.
Yeah.
And is like, you can imagine that the path to being a really, really, really incredible deep rooted fund comes from people who had first invested their own money.
Yep.
Then did a really broad, but like high effort search. It like got a ton of reps with small checks. And then through that developed like an even more sensitive sort of radar and conviction and credibility to then tighten it a little bit more and do even larger checks or then start leading rounds or adding partners with deliberate expertise or like finding ways to scale the deployment of more capital to early stage high tech founders in a bunch of different ways. But I feel like the thing that we are doing now is resulting in a really, really high rate of learning, which feels great.
Yep.
You know, especially in a place of slow feedback loops.
It's
a little hard to learn really, really fast when it takes, you know, 12 to 24 months to.
Well, thankfully we had crypto that helped accelerate a bunch of that. It's like, a lot of lessons there.
Yeah.
Consumer stuff. I mean,
I think that's how it works though, right? Like you have a crypto, then you have an AI thing. And then like it is like one of the things that like, as there is more technology, whatever fusion, right? Like there are all of these buckets where it's like the faster all of the technology gets adopted, like the more of those there are. And it's like, if you don't have exposure to them by the time you want it, it's too late. And like, we are getting lots of exposure to all of them as they're being born.
That's a good point.
And that's cool, man.
That's a really good point. And like everything, you know, there across the board in every industry, we've had ones that are like really cool until they're not.
Yep.
You know, and that's, I think that's the hardest emotional roller coaster for me to go on because I'm like, we're geniuses. We're pretty rich. You know, like we killed it. And then all of a sudden,
and then we're idiots.
We get the email. It's like, we're pivoting. Everything's broken. Nothing's working. We're out of here. And it's like, oh, suck, man. Yeah. Like, that was so much wind in my sails. Like that emotional roller coaster from an investor standpoint has been one of those that like I didn't expect to be as difficult to sort of still enjoy what we're doing as it is sometimes when you know, you can write, you can on paper, you can know that you're going to have to be wrong 7 times to be right the one. Right. And it's like when that lives out in reality, it's brutal. Yeah. It is brutal to be wrong 7 or 8 times along the way to getting really right that 1 or 2.
And the errors of omission and the feedback loop of that too. Like somebody,
you pass on one and they're like, listen, you suckers.
Yeah. And then like become a viral phenomenon on Twitter, like 6 months later, and you're like, fuck. And then you got to remember, like, you know, zoom out and be like, you know, it takes 15 years to build a great company just because somebody's like getting a lot of attention on Twitter. Like not necessarily, you know, mean you made a wrong investment decision. But even if you like there, the thing that bugs me or the thing that keeps you up at night is the ones that you love that we just didn't have the capital to do.
Yeah.
Where you're like, this I have truth, high truth conviction social. Just as much.
is that what we're talking
Did
about?
We have that opportunity?
It was so hot on Twitter, man. Everyone's talking about this. And if I could go back in time.
Yeah. I just like, I would love to be in a place where we are shooting every shot we think is worth shooting.
Yeah.
Like even with small checks, we're like not there yet. And it's just painful to see what are clearly great opportunities.
That is one of the worst ones where like, hey, we're here, love you guys, you got 2 weeks, and it's like,
yeah,
can we commit now and send you money in 3 quarters?
But as the kids say, skill issue, like more
they say that.
Oh yeah,
skill issue. Yeah. I've never heard that. My kids aren't old
skill
enough.
Issue. All right, we got one more. Speaking of genius founders, got one more portfolio company to get through in for the Q4 update. So Atomic Industries.
Oh, we love that.
I'm so excited about this.
Tyler.
No, this is Aaron Slotoff.
It's
Aaron.
Just so frontier-y is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, like just the founder alone is like Midwest, like grew up playing D&D. Like you had me.
You've described everybody I know.
You had me at D&D. All right. See if
he now works at 7-Eleven and wishes there was a job where he could just stare at the wall. That's most of my grew up in the Midwest, played D&D a lot.
He's now a level 12 mage.
Hey! And got into Magic the Gathering, sold his cards, made a fortune. Nice, that's my gosh.
Studied physics and engineering, went to work at Google X Moonshot Factory.
What a great did job some AI out of college.
Oh my god, it'd be so cool.
I want to go work at Google Moonshot
Factory. I wonder if it's as fun as it seems like from
it's,
my
it point feels of view. Like Rob Dyrdek's Fun Factory to me. That's what I'm imagining in my head where it's like, yeah, let's do a backflip today.
Guys, internet blimps. Yeah. Oh, okay, let's go. So then he did some AI software engineering, and the company that he's now starting, which is a few years into, this is definitely like later stage than some of our other investments, but we still feel quite good about it. It was a very big seed round. It was almost it was $17 million seed round.
You need money to get started. That's what they say.
Well, this is, so this is very much like the fully vertically integrated version of this company. All right. So it's AI assisted tool and die manufacturer. For those who did not grow up in the Midwest near factories, like if you're going to manufacture a bunch of shit, you need a die mold you need to tool it. And it's a really expensive manual, like iterative process that is like this blue collar, like part science, part craft. And it's expensive and it takes months of trial and error to like get exactly nano perfect mold that you're going to use millions of times to manufacture something. You have to run coolant through it in this really specific pattern to reach like the optimal speed, temperature reduction to like speed up this whole factory line. It's a real like a bottleneck and an expensive thing in the manufacturing.
If you would have played D&D more, you guys would know this. Anyway.
Aaron's insight was that like this is a bounded problem in physics, and with a ton of compute and the new AI stuff that's coming out, you can solve this in a fraction, like less than 10% of the time. And that drastically reduces the cost, that speeds up manufacturing lines all over the place. So let's get a shitload of compute and let's get the factory that we need to build this thing. And I think early conversations with him, he's like, I'm not sure if I'm going to sell this to every tool and die company in the world or if I'm going to become like the biggest tool and die company in the world. And like, either way, this is a big company. I was like, okay, cool. And he, part of this round is buying a old tool and die manufacturing facility in Detroit. So the headquarters in San Francisco, Aaron's there, but he's building this, buying and retooling this like factory in Detroit.
It's fun.
Which is so cool. And so it is very kind of like, to me, it fits in the sort of Tesla, Hadrian, like software and hardware engineers descending upon this factory and building start to finish the thing. So they'll be selling die molds directly to customers. Toyota is a huge investor because they spend billions of dollars a year on tool and die. So I think very strategic investors, huge support for them, like incredibly hot round.
I didn't even genius. Know Toyota went in on seed rounds.
I think when they're maybe when they're $17 million a year. And they're going to spend, you know, nine figures a year, maybe, who knows? Like it's a really exciting company. It's one of those things like you've got to be so far into this kind of supply chain to even know that this is a problem, let alone have the skills to solve it at this level. Again,
yeah, the balls to say, this industry that's been around for 200 years.
Yeah.
I've got a better way. I'm going to go make this and then even the concept of like, I don't know if I'm the tool and die company of the future or if I will sell to everybody else. I might murder the whole industry and take over. We could support what's there. I haven't decided. Like,
yeah, it is a huge vision, but a very specific one. He's like attacking it.
Yeah,
it's a really very cool company. And what is exciting? So I think this could be a, you know, this hits our 100x sort of underwrite, even if they just take over the tool and die market. But all of the,
even if that's all they knew,
but there are so many like the skill set that it takes to win that market. There are so many adjacent opportunities in manufacturing that are also enormous, enormous markets. And the team that they're building and the vision that they have and the skills that they will have is just going to be, I think the upside potential on even the successful version of the plan as we invested in it now is still insane.
Oh yeah, this was a no-brainer for us. It's the only thing you would change about it is like make it earlier and cheaper. But like this is one of those things that just requires a lot of capital, but it's the right people. It's obviously a compelling market. Yep. The intersection of technology that's going to keep changing it, and they're on the front end. Like this was like directly in the wheelhouse of the checks that we would write every time. Just honestly, like my real take on this is like, I wish there was like 1,000 other people building things like this, and it is like the real rate limiter is like human capital. It's like what it is. And so this will be a fun one to see play out.
Yeah, I'm psyched about this. And because it's later stage, I do think we're gonna see like that hockey stick come out soon. Like they're gonna be selling these like
it's awesome
soon, and we'll start to see that really market like feedback
this
loop.
Year
I don't want to commit them to that from my
let me say it by perch of ignorance. They'll be
I'm gonna steal. We'll be right back after I break Al's mic.
This is not investment advice, but you guys should put all your life savings.
So that's a portfolio for Q4. If you were subscribed to us in Q4,
good work.
Congratulations yet again on being free rich. You own a piece of Portola and Marathon Fusion and Atomic Industries.
What are you, geniuses? You guys.
If you weren't subscribing Q4,
losers,
too slow.
Yeah,
too
get slow. Get in on Q1. Another hot shot.
Q2. Your opportunity is now Q2. You've already missed out on Q1.
Oh yeah, screw you guys.
No, I think we should pause and then stop and then do Q1.
Okay,
because
this is the end.
I think it should be.
Yeah, let's
till next time, everybody.
Wrap on Q4 and our
for Bo and Eric.
Then.
I'm Al.
Yeah, we'll be back very soon with another edition of.
From
Rolling
the same
fun.
Spot, like in 3 minutes.
Sign up for the Smart Friends email newsletter at ejorgensen.com. Invest with me and my partners through Rolling Fun. Links to both are in the show notes below. To support the show, please text this episode to a friend or coworker who you think would enjoy saving the world instead of building SaaS for dogs or optimizing pay-per-click ads. Every episode you listen to, every good idea you learn brings us one step closer to utopia. So thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time.
The Podcast Super Friends is a monthly meeting of five podcast producers.
Hi, I'm Catherine O'Brien from Branch Out Programs in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
I'm John Gay from Jag and Detroit Podcasts.
I'm Matt Kundle from the Sound Off Podcast Network.
I'm David Yes from Pod 617, the Boston Podcast Network.
And I'm Johnny Peterson from Straight Up Podcasts.
Together, they form the Podcast Super Friends, an alliance of podcast masterminds sharing best practices, insights, and discussions to help make you a better podcaster. Follow or subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or at soundoff.network.